All right, Las Vegas, welcome to a Saturday night edition of Heatwave Sports. I am Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com. Tim McLongelsby was going to be joining us probably in the second hour as we're going to talk about a little bit of Major League Baseball. I got a lot to talk about tonight. Look, first of all, we have got to get into the NBA playoffs. The NBA playoffs, they're up and running. I know we don't spend a lot of time on the NBA here on the show. I watch a lot of the NBA, especially come playoff time, and I've called it an unwatchable product. I've called the NBA for years an unwatchable product until the playoffs. Well, here it goes again. You know, they have me sucked in again, and we'll talk about a little bit about the NBA playoffs. Stanley Cup playoffs, absolutely just a weird situation when you're seeing how many goals is being scored, how it's being led by offense. You don't see that in the Stanley Cup playoffs. My predictions are so far looking pretty good, and I want to talk to you a little bit about the Stanley Cup playoffs as well. Hour number two, lots of Major League Baseball talk. We could talk about it the whole show if you want. Look, some of the biggest stars are really struggling. Matt Olson is batting under 200. For a while there, Judge was. He's corrected himself. Will Olson correct himself? I don't know. Will Pete Alonso correct himself, the slugger? Will Paul Goldschmidt correct himself, who is now 0 for 34 after four strikeouts today? Julio Rodriguez has one home run on the year. So we have a litany of guys that I want to talk about, the biggest stars. And is it too early to talk about trades? I'm starting to hear Mason Miller's name being brought up in trade rumors this week. Mason Miller, all of a sudden, is the hot commodity. I had heard a report from a baseball insider that said what they want for Mason Miller out there in Oakland is the same sort of package Juan Soto got. And before you laugh at that, I don't think that's too far of a stretch. I will explain all that in hour number two. So we have a lot to get into here. You guys can hit me up over on Twitter. It's Tom Barton Sports over on the X and at HW Sports. For right now, hit me up over at Tom Barton Sports since Tim's not here quite yet. So before I go any further, happy Mother's Day out there to all the mothers that will be listening. Make sure you guys, you run out. If you're waiting around, you go, oh my goodness, I forgot it's Mother's Day. Look, mom doesn't need necessarily, a really expensive present. Go get a card. Go make that phone call. Go make that nice design on Facebook and send it out to her, whatever it might be. Make sure she's thinking that you're thinking of her, right? And she knows that you mean something. That is my Mother's Day message. Same thing goes for your wives, by the way. If you don't want to be in the doghouse, make sure you do that. So let's get into a little NBA to start the show. And I know we don't talk about a lot about the NBA, but I've said it. Look, Tim gave up watching the NBA a couple of years ago. He said it was an unwatchable product. I have repeated that. And he asks me every year, Tom, did I miss anything? And during the regular season, I said, Tim, no, you didn't. You haven't missed anything during the regular season in the NBA. You haven't missed anything overly exciting. Nothing that makes me say, oh yeah, here we go. No. A game here or there could be very exciting. Maybe. But nothing that Tim has missed until the playoffs. And actually, recently, here's the thing. The last couple of years, really since the pandemic, it hasn't been too fun of a playoff atmosphere either. Jokic's winning the MVP, well-deserved. But the overall feel of basketball has changed. And the excitement level had really changed. But I'm buying in. I am watching games with a edge of my seat sort of mentality. And maybe, look, it could be a lot of factors. Maybe it's because I don't really care about the stars, quote unquote. Because a lot of these teams don't have multiple stars. Maybe it's because, you know, we're all tired of getting the LeBron thing, you know, shoved down our throat that he's so great and, well, he's out of the playoffs. Okay, now we can enjoy. Perhaps it's because of the style of play that has come back to a more physical style of play, a more defensive-minded style. But I also think that these teams are easy to root for this year. I am not a Knicks fan. Though I live in New York, I'm not a Knicks fan. The New York Knicks are an easy team to root for. And I said that midway through the season. There are a lot of likable guys on that team. They lose Jalen Brunson. They come out. They still win that game. Man, they're an easy team to root for. The Cavs are an easy team to root for. The Thunder, easy team to root for. You have these teams that are easy to root for. And I think that their style of play, the Pacers, easy team to root for. The, we'll call it, villains are somewhat removed here. I mean, do you not like Jokic because he's just too good? Maybe. Maybe. But let's not paint him into being a villain, guys. Right? I mean, Jokic is a good guy, good for the game. Let's not paint him into being a villain, because he's not. Luka, all right, Luka has his detractors. Luka has, you know, the naysayers. Luka's got a little hate going towards his way, but I wouldn't say villain level, right? The villain of the league is out. He's out of the playoffs, LeBron. A lot of people hate Durant. He's not here either. You know, I mean, the guys that are left, by and large, are young, exciting, fun players. Even Jason Tatum. And I know that the Celtics are probably the team that people are looking at. But look, how much success have they really had? How much success has Jason Tatum really had? So I think it's great that we have a new crop of teams. I think it's great we have a new feeling in the NBA. And it has absolutely grabbed me. The Knicks style of play has grabbed me. The Cavs, I love what I watch. Look, I liked Orlando in the first round. I like to look at what they're doing. This Thunder Magic series is fantastic. Mavs win 105-101 today. That's a really great game. Look, the Celtics game wasn't a great game, but it's a 2-1 series. I mean, it's still a 2-1 series. You look at tomorrow and you go, Knicks-Pacers has been really fun. Knicks up 2-1. They're losing Brunson. Remember, they lost their, pretty much, I'll call them their star player, Randall, earlier in the year. That's a fun series. And even Nuggets-Timberwolves. Who doesn't like the T-Wolves right now? I mean, you know, you look at Anthony Edwards and you see a lot of comparisons to MJ. And I don't think it's purely because of his style. I think the way he carries himself. I think the fact that he is a likable guy that you could root for him. So while the NBA's product on the field still isn't, we'll call it dynamic, or on the court, I should say, it isn't still dynamic, it's getting better. And it's getting better with each round, which is what you want. In the first round, there were some dull games. In the first round, there were some spots where you go, you know, I don't know. But as the second round came around, each one of these series, which I just went over, it's really fun. They're close. They're getting there. You don't know who's going to win on any given night. Even the Celtics, who are the biggest favorites, again, 8.5-point favorite today. I think it went down to about 7.5 in some spots. But an 8.5-point favorite today. 13-point favorite. They lost as a 13.5-point favorite. They lost. By the way, one of the sports books out there, and I won't mention their name to embarrass them. You guys can do the research. Embarrass them any more than they should be embarrassed. But it worked out for them. One of the ticket writers made a giant mistake, and he gave out the Celtics plus 13.5. Imagine the guy holding the ticket. Wow, I got a mistake in my favor. Celtics plus 13.5. You still lost the game. That was two games ago. Celtics came back tonight, though, won the game by 13 points. And this is the Celtics team I think that we're all expecting. I think we expect the Celtics to hoist the trophy at the end, right? I mean, you can nitpick and poke holes in it, and I have done that, about who the Celtics are ultimately. You can argue about who the Celtics will become this season. We can have the discussion on where you see them vulnerable and how they might choke it away and where it could go wrong. We've watched it all, and they oftentimes have those lapses. But when they're on, they're the best team in basketball. When they're on, I mean, that's just it. Look at what they just did to the Heat, guys, right? Game one came out, won the game by 20. Mentally lapsed at home, lose that game. In a game where the Heat just shot lights out. Came back, won by 20. Came back, won by 14. You know, and then in the closeout game, once again, turned around and just dominated. Dominated by 30-plus points against the Cavs. Come out night one. All right, we won by 25. Okay. Yeah, these guys are going to be pretty easy. And then they lose game two. Come back in game three. Here we go. We're back to 13-point favorite. Back to winning by 13 without a problem. So now you have a game on Monday in Cleveland. Then it goes back home against Boston, where they'll look to close it out if they could win the next two. And I think that that is Boston's only flaw. You could talk about X's and O's. You could talk about big man. You could talk about their outside defense where guys can just really can just knock it down. We could talk about all that. The reality of the situation with the Boston Celtics is this. Only the Boston Celtics can beat the Boston Celtics. Now, that's just reality, guys. Only the Boston Celtics can truly beat the Boston Celtics. They get in their own head. They beat a team by 25 or 30 points, and then it kind of let up a little bit. The Boston Celtics have always, during this incarnation, missed that thing that they had back in the 80s and then back in the 2000s when they won those championships. When you had Garnett and Pierce and Bird and McHale and the lot, when you had those players, they've been missing this, that killer instinct. That instinct of, if I beat you by 25 tonight, I want to beat you by 35 tomorrow. They don't have that. And to win a championship, do you need that? Maybe not in today's NBA. But like I said, today's NBA seems to be changing a little bit. With that said, can we really write off the Cavs? Look, they've had their bad games. They already stole a game here. The Cavs are not done. They're going home. If you told a Cleveland Cavs fan before this series, you'd be going back home in a situation where, you know, I mean, you're going to be playing a game on Monday with a chance to even the series. Chance to even the series. I think Cleveland's taking that all day. So you can't write Cleveland off. Mavericks, Thunder, Mavs get by 105-101 tonight. I thought that the general consensus here was that people didn't understand who the Thunder were this year. The Thunder were the number one overall seed, and they're not getting any credit for that. I mean, in the first round, I made money off of them, and I bet a very, very, very limited amount of NBA games this year. I made money off of them twice in the first round because nobody's giving them credit for being a number one seed and how good they can be. But they are down 2-1. They smoked the Mavs in game one, losing game two, close loss in game three. Now they're traveling back. Well, they'll stay back against Minnesota on Monday. And if Minnesota, I'm sorry, in Dallas on Monday, and if Dallas goes up 3-1, I mean, the series is over, right? Is the series over at 3-1? It certainly feels that way. Certainly feels that way. So while we can say that people are overlooking the Thunder, hey, you know, Dallas could be in a spot to move on. And I will tell you what, the NBA, the brass at the NBA have got to be pretty happy. You have a chance right now to have Luka moving on. That's the star they want to push. That's a face they want to push. And this is not a rip on what the Thunder are, but the names of Holmgren, and take away the singing of SGA, right? And they are just not star quality where Luka is. The Boston Celtics and Jason Tatum, they're star quality, and you could push them. So the brass are happy about where these series are headed, but a very, very crucial game four coming up for both of them on Monday. Looking ahead to tomorrow, I said Knicks-Pacers is just a fun. Knicks are just a fun team, guys. They just are. The fact that they lose Julius Randle and they continue to just keep winning. The fact that they lose Jalen Brunson and then they continue to just keep winning. What they've done is show heart and grit. And I mentioned this on the show a couple of weeks ago where I was trying to convince Tim. I said, look, you know, that 76ers-Knicks series was back to old school basketball. The basketball we all love. It was there. It was back to it. You had to be pumped up about it. And now they're playing the Pacers in a spot where here we go again. It's fun games. Tight games. Spread's been, you know, 3, 4, 5 tops. I mean, this has been fun. Knicks lost by 5 last time. Won by 9 the time before that. Won by 4 before that. They're playing all kinds of close games. If you want close, good, fun basketball, Knicks-Pacers is it. And again, here we go. The Knicks being good and advancing is good for basketball. Say what you want. Hate on the East Coast, I get it. Hate on New York, I get it. Call me a homer, even though I'm not a Knicks fan, I get it. But basketball is good in a good spot where the Knicks are good. I'm not telling you they have to win. But Indiana against Boston, or Indiana against Oklahoma City, or Indiana against, you know, Dallas in the championship, or Indiana moving on doesn't move the needle, guys. It doesn't move the needle. The Knicks do. Yeah, I'm paying attention to that. Brunson's becoming a star in front of our eyes. You're paying attention to that. And then you have the T-Wolves and the Nuggets. I think either way, you have a great story. T-Wolves Nuggets is a great... There's a reason why on a Sunday with a New York market in the playoffs, they are not the 8 o'clock game. Because, man, Nuggets, T-Wolves are just fun. And you're starting to look at the Denver Nuggets and you're starting to say, okay, when are they going to turn it on? The T-Wolves had gone 6-0 against the spread to start off the playoffs. And we kept saying, okay, when will Denver turn it on? When will Jokic just absolutely take over? 24-14-9 last game is a nice start, and they won by 27. Was that the takeover? Was that where everything sort of turns here? Is that where it's all going to sort of turn? Because Anthony Edwards is standing in his way, and Anthony Edwards is now positioning himself as the next star of this league. Jokic is there right now, MVP after he should have 4 in a row. Jokic is there right now, and he's standing in the way. This is what you like about sports. If you are not a basketball fan, or you have not been paying attention this year, guys, this is what you like about sports. You like that the new young guy needs to slay the dragon, needs to slay the MVP in this case. The Denver Nuggets stand in the way of Anthony Edwards elevating to the next level. I thought it was going to be Jason Tatum. I thought maybe if Tatum beat the Nuggets, that all of a sudden, boom, he elevates to that superstar level. I don't think he's superstar level yet, but he might be. But I still think he's falling off. There would be no doubt if Tatum wins a championship in Boston and he does it by taking down Jokic. Oh, wow. Let's write the stories now. But suddenly Anthony Edwards is that guy. And Luka can be that guy. And Brunson can be that guy. So we're in an interesting position here in the NBA this year because you have good teams playing, good team sports playing, good, we'll call them secondary players stepping up. It feels a lot like what the NBA used to be 15, 20 years ago. Starting to feel like that in this playoff series. But you also have the budding stars, which is the best of both worlds for the NBA, for the NBA brass, for the advertisers, for the TV, and for just overall sports fans. You love to see the idea of who is going to step up, who's going to carry their team. Luka against Edwards is just dynamic. It's just pure dynamic. Can Jokic against Edwards, can he again push down the guy and say, you're not taking the title? What if it's Jokic against Luka? Oh, that could be fun too. On the other side, Tatum against Brunson is what everybody wants to see. You could be a Celtics hater. You could be a Knicks hater. But if you're a fan of the NBA, you want to see Brunson, a healthy Brunson, against Tatum for the right to go to the championship. Boston's a much better team. They'll be, what, 15-point favorites in games? 14, 15, 16-point favorites. They'll be huge favorites in the games. But if you're the Knicks, you're going, hey, we're constantly underdogs. And we've been playing it all year. T-Wolves, same thing. Constant underdogs. Covering machines they are. Look at it tomorrow. Look, I don't know how you could lay points with the Pacers other than just count that the Knicks have too many injuries. Just because these have been close series. I would say the same thing. Look, if the Knicks were laying 5.5, I'd be telling you probably lean in the Pacers in that spot. Or just lay off. That's going to be a good game. And then at night, T-Wolves are 3-point favorite against the Nuggets. Here we go. Do you believe that, you know, Jokic turned the page? That the Denver Nuggets found that championship pedigree, that MVP pedigree, and now you're getting free points with the Nugs? Or is this T-Wolf country? They got lucky one game. We dominated the first two. T-Wolves have turned it on. really interesting to see how these coaches are going to attack tomorrow as well. All right, guys, let's take a quick timeout. Come on back when we do. I want to talk a little bit about the NBA. Just for a brief note about the NBA, and then I want to get into NHL. A lot of hockey talk coming back on the other side of the break right after this, right here on Heatwave Sports.
And now back to Heatwave Sports. Here's Tom Barton.
All right, guys, back here, Heatwave Sports. Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com. And guys, I've been absolutely rolling for 2 months straight now at TomBartonSports.com. Hitting underdogs, loving baseball. Baseball underdogs are fun. Baseball underdogs are fun. And hockey, look, I give you guys the numbers, and I give you guys the actual facts where you can look at it. It's monitored by outside sources. I have nothing to do with them. All I do is go input my plays. A lot of guys are doing that nowadays, and they sort of own something. You know, they own a piece of the company. They get to change it up. They only tell you certain things. Oh, they randomly find tickets randomly. Oh, wait a minute. Let me post these online. I've been doing this for 13 years. 13 years I've been telling you. You guys could go find me. Here you go. Go look at my records. Go look at what I do. Every single game. And Tom Barton Sports, I have never had a losing season since being on the air. I have losing months here and there. I'm just in a red hot zone right now. Absolutely. For the last... Now we're entering seven straight weeks of just pure, absolutely domination. Just under 70% in, you know, three sports. Right? I mean, three sports combined, absolutely crushing it. So go check me out. It's TomBartonSports.com. All right, look, let's talk a little NHL hockey because Stanley Cup playoffs are here. The Stanley Cup playoffs are into the second round. And I got to tell you, not much different than sort of what I expected. And I'm not telling you that from a Tom Barton Sports, I know everything that's going on. No. I'm telling you that from a perspective of we sat here on the air and a lot of things are just going the way that I expected. And let's talk about the Rangers and Hurricanes. I told you guys before the playoffs, I actually told you, yeah, very quickly into the year because we didn't have an official NHL preview show. I told you I thought the Rangers could win it all. Before the playoffs began, I told you the Rangers would win it all. And I had some guys write me. You guys wrote me a Tom Barton Sports on the X. Oh, come on. What are you talking about? Listen, when you have a team like this that has multiple shooters, I know you have Panarin, but you got multiple outs there late in the game. Their power play is dynamic. Absolutely the best power play right now in the playoffs. I think they were the best power play entering the playoffs. They have the best goalie. They have, maybe in Fox, maybe the best defensive player in the league. And they won the President's Trophy for a reason, yet they were underdogs. Yet in round one, they were underdogs multiple times. Tonight, they were underdogs up 3-0, but they were underdogs two nights ago, and they won, right? So they're up 3-1. They tie it down 3-1. Look, they're losing the game 3-1. Up in the series 3-0 on the road. Really easy to fold up your tents right there, right? All right, you know what? Play another day. No problem. They come back to tie it at 3-3. It takes a power play with just minutes to go for the Hurricanes to get the 4-3 win. Look, this series is all over but the Shouty. They're not coming back. Hurricanes aren't coming back. Rangers are they should have won tonight. Rangers should have won tonight. They got a game on Monday. They'll close it out on Monday. And they'll be decided favorites to close it out on Monday. I'm not the least bit concerned. What I am a little bit, and this goes to the whole sort of Stanley Cup playoffs feel that it's been so far. What I am a little bit surprised about is how much scoring we've had in all of the playoffs. 7 goals in game one, 7 goals in game two, 5 in game three, 7 goals tonight combined between the two teams. It's a lot of overs. A lot of overs, guys. Against the Capitals, look, the Caps couldn't do anything. Caps scored 1-3, 1-2. The Caps couldn't score, but the Rangers still put up 4-4, 3-4. I mean, the Rangers are scoring with a guy like Igor in goal and a top five defense, and they've upped their scoring in the playoffs. I still believe that this series is over. I don't care what happened tonight. In a lot of ways, and this is going to sound dumb, I don't care. In a lot of ways, it's almost better that they didn't sweep and then have to sit around for the Florida and Boston. Where we know what happens to teams when they sit around. So maybe going one more game isn't the worst thing. But this is all over but the shouting. Carolina, nice way to avoid being swept, but come on. Rangers are moving on. And the Rangers look like the most dangerous team in the country. They do. You can't make a legit argument about anybody else. Anybody else. There's nobody that looks like what the Rangers look like right now. And I'm not talking about just this series. And I'm not talking because they swept Washington. Once again, guys, the President's Trophy winner. And I know the jinx that goes with it. I get it. I know what you're saying. Tom, that's a jinx. Tom, nobody ever wins with that. I get it. I see a team with very little flaws. I see a team where in order to beat them in a 7-game series, you're going to have to crack a top 5 defense, a dynamic goaltender, and, oh, by the way, shut down their offense. This isn't a one-level team. This isn't a one-sided approach. The Rangers are dynamic, guys. I've said it for a while. I think they're the best team in hockey, and it's proving so. This is what I'm saying, by the way, after a loss. They lost tonight, and I'm singing their praises. Just like I sung their praises last week. Just like before the playoffs, I told you what this team was going to be. This is who they are. This is the team. So forget about the jinx and forget about all that. Start watching what kind of hockey they are playing and find me the flaw. If you see a flaw in this team, guys, and I mean anything from coaching to special teams, which they've been amazing. Coaching, special teams, goalie, defense, offense, key shooter. Find me a flaw. Send it to me at Tom Barton Sports over on X. I'll read it on the air. If it has value or not, I will read it on the air. You want to be a part of the show? Give us a call. 876-1340. 876-1340. Let me know. Find me the flaw on this team. Find me a flaw in the argument that I am presenting. Because I don't see one, guys. I just don't see a flaw on this team anywhere. That doesn't mean they're going to win the cup. But I like them more than anybody else. By a rather large margin, too. I'm not sure. And when I say by a large margin, that doesn't mean they can't be beat. What I'm saying is that I'm not sure. I truly am not sure who's the second best team right now in the playoffs. But I know who's the first. I'm not positive that I know who the second team is. But I certainly know who the first. And the first is going away. I don't even know if you guys, I called you out. I don't know if anybody could bring a legitimate argument other than, well, you know what? I'm superstitious. Other than something like I'm superstitious and there's a jinx attached to what they did during the regular season. Other than that, find me a flaw because I don't see one. The other game that we had tonight, Stars Avalanche. You know, this one, I thought that the Avs could win. I wasn't sure. I told Tim and I told you guys, kind of a coin flip game for me. It's coin flip series. It's one of those series that I truly think it could have gone either way. I truly look at this series and I go, yeah, you know what? I could see both sides. I thought Colorado had too many scorers. I thought Colorado was going to be that team that you look at and you go, okay, look, at the end of the day, they have the stars. They have the superstars. And when you have those superstars, it is hard. It really is hard with those superstars to overlook what they can do late in the game. That's why I went with Colorado. And Colorado, look, they're only down 2-1. It's not like they've played poorly. Game one, they won in overtime. Maybe a game they shouldn't have won. Stars came back, scored 5 and 4. I mean, the Stars offense is the offense that's carrying them right now. You can argue, if you're a Stars fan, you're arguing right now that this series should be 3-0. If you're a Stars fan, you're arguing it's 3-0. We've capitalized on the series. We've pretty much taken advantage the entire series. We should be shutting them, putting them away. We should be shutting them out as far as games are. Game one should have been ours. If you're the Avs, what are you clinging to here? Hey, we've played like garbage and we're not down 0-3? You just, and forget about the 4 goals, because tonight, you know, a lot of them were late, empty netters. Kind of. The Avs scored 1 goal. That the Avs and their offense scored 1 goal. Now they have a home game again on Monday, where you could talk about pedigree, talk about veterans, talk about their offense. It's a must win. The end. It is a must win game for this franchise, for this season. You have to win this game. You know that in this spot, Colorado is relying a lot on, well, we have the experience. We have the mental edge. They've got to beat us. And the Stars, they look like they're just having fun out there. I am surprised. I told you there was no real surprises. I'm not surprised that the Stars are up 2-1. Thought it was going to be very close. I'm surprised that it looks to me like Dallas has the mental advantage. It looks to me like Dallas is having fun out there. Colorado's in a little pressure situation. Stars are the number one overall seed, guys. Just to remind you, Stars are looking like they're playing a little free and loose as the one seed. And perhaps I overlook this Stars team. I know when we were sitting down and we were going over things, and I said, you know, I could see them losing to Colorado. Tim said the same thing. And I just don't see the Stars as a championship-level team this year. I think they're missing a couple of components that I like from a championship team. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed something, because what they've done against Colorado, even in the loss, has been massively impressive. Massively impressive. They're a one seed for a reason. Almost everything I could have said about the Rangers, right? They're a one seed for a reason. Just thought Colorado was going to be able to have more offensive success. And their offensive success just hasn't shown up. I keep thinking that there's going to be a game where the Avs, you know, pile on 6 goals. Yeah, the Avs just go crazy. Their scoring just jumps up. Oh, like they did against the Jets. Against the Jets, they scored 6-5, 6-5, 6. I mean, I was expecting that kind of offense. And I was expecting that entering the playoffs, not all of a sudden because of what they did against Winnipeg. I think Colorado can still win this series. But they have got to find this offense. They have got to find this offense. I think that I wouldn't change my pick right now, but I'd be very concerned, really concerned. All right, guys, let's take a quick time out. Come on back when we do. Still talking a little NHL playoffs. I'll preview tomorrow's games. Tell you who I like coming out of those series, because we're not going to talk again for a little while after tonight's show. So we'll get into more of that right after this, right here on Heatwave Sports. All right, guys, back here, Heatwave Sports. Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com. Tim Unglesby is going to try to be joining us in hour number two. Hour number two. We're going to talk a lot of Major League Baseball. We talked a little bit about the NBA. We're in the middle of some NHL talk. And I do love, look, I love the Twitter interaction and the X interaction and the all of it. I love it. And somebody just wrote, Tom, you want a flaw in your Rangers. They're from New York. Okay, there you go. That, again, if that's what you need to pull for, right? I mean, if that's all you have, makes me feel good. If that's all you have, then it makes me feel good. Superior coaching, superior goaltending, big time goal scorer and multiple, big time defense, top five defense. There's nothing that this team doesn't have, unless you want to bring something like that up. Yeah, I get it. The jealousy is real. It's okay. It's okay to be jealous. Your team sent home. They're on the golf course. I get it. There's a little jealousy there. No problem. It's okay. But let's look at this as hockey fans. And let's look at this objectively as hockey fans. Because I'm asking right now, who's the second best team in hockey? That doesn't mean they're going to win the cup. Best team doesn't always win. They're the best team. The best team in the game. They're the best team in the playoffs. They're the best team during the regular season. They are the best team. Period. Put a period on the end of that sentence. New York Rangers are the best team in hockey. And they have been all year. How about that? And I'm not sure who the number two team is. I don't know. Put it this way. I don't know if the Stars or Avs are winning. We're going to get into tomorrow's or Mother's Day games, we'll call them. Bruins-Panthers. I think the Panthers are better. Panthers are probably maybe the second best team in the league. I mean, Oilers-Canucks. I'm not sure who's winning that series. Would anyone be surprised if the Bruins at home tied it up? So you can't sit here and argue that a team is the second best team in hockey and let's have conversations about are they even getting out of this round? You can't sit here and make that argument. You know, and the New York thing, it was funny, haha, you know, but I did. I threw the gauntlet down. I asked you guys, come up with a flaw for me for the Rangers that wasn't just a jinx or you didn't like them or they're from New York or they got bad colors. I don't like the name Igor. You know, Panarin sounds like I don't like a takeout place. I mean, no, come up with something substantial. You guys are hockey fans now. Vegas is a hockey town now. Come with hockey takes, not just Vegas Golden Knights takes. Come at me with hockey takes and tell me where the flaw is and follow that up with who's the second best team in hockey right now. Because I'll tell you what, if I asked that question a week ago, a lot of people would have told me Carolina. If I asked that question before the second round of the playoffs started, and I said, who's the best team going into the playoffs? There would have been a couple of people saying the Oilers. I don't know if anybody would have said the Canucks. No one's saying the Bruins. I don't think anyone was going to say the Avs. The Stars were in question to win look, it wasn't even that big of a spread. They were in question. It would have been maybe the Panthers. But the reality is that a lot of people before the playoffs began, or before the second round of the playoffs began, if I asked who was the second best team in the league? First of all, you would have got jumped on me for going and saying that the Rangers were the best. And a lot of people would have said Carolina. Rangers, listen, the Rangers were underdogs in the series, guys. I pounded them for that. I am all over them for the series. All over them. And the big argument for why that they were the underdogs, the big argument was that Carolina was better on a 5-on-5. Yeah, but the Rangers are the best special team. I mean, their penalty kills are insane. Shorthanded goal the other night. Find me the second best team in hockey, because that's what we're looking for right now. Number one is done. It's said. It's over. All right, let's look at tomorrow. Panthers, Bruins. Panthers may be. And I called it, if you guys were listening, I called it. I said the Panthers, because they're sitting at home, they may lose game one, but they're going to win this series. And it's kind of going true to form here. But here we go again. I'm going to give you it again. As Paul Heyman would say, right? It's a prediction. It's not a prediction. It's a spoiler, right? I think that they're going to have some trouble tomorrow. I'm definitely not laying the 165 with them. Now, I didn't take Boston because Boston has looked, let's just say, uninspiring. We talk about lack of offense. They've scored 3 goals in 2 games. They've allowed 12 goals. But if there is a game where Boston has something left, some piece of pride left, some of that guile and gut that we talk about, if there is a game that they have that left, it's going to be at home in a crucial Game 4 tomorrow. This is the game that could bite Florida. If Florida wins a game, series is over. And I've said that many times, but it is. Then it's going back to Florida. Boston's done. And we all thought Boston was going to run out of steam at this point. We all believed. I don't know anybody that had Boston moving on with actual money. And when I say that, look, let me preface this, because I say this a lot on the air, and I get a lot of pushback from people. Oh, I had the... It's easy to tell your friends you think that they're going to win. I think they're going to win. Okay. You take a shot. It's even easy for radio hosts to throw it out there, right? And a lot of them, especially the new guys that want the clickbait, they want the soundbite, they want Instagram and TikTok and everything else. They're going to take a crazy, I'm going to take a shot. Because if they lose, nobody jumps on them. And if they win, they can tout that. Oh, look at what I said. I was the one who had Boston. I did it. It takes a little bit more to come out and put your name on something. Put it in a newspaper, right? Take that stand and say, here we go, right? It takes a little bit more. But the true backing of a team, that you believe in that team and you believe in that underdog, is exactly why underdogs are not often bet in sports, why the public loves favorites. Because you have to walk up there. Well, now you don't have to because you got it on your phone, but you have to go and put actual money on your prediction. There's not a lot of people, and I can't name one, that went out there and took Boston in the series. At the end of their series, you could tell me that Boston has a fighting chance and everything. At the end of their series against the Maple Leafs, it was a battle. Back and forth battle. Overtime game. Good back. And they just looked like they were going to hit a wall. Came out in game one. Florida sitting at home. And they just jumped on them. I mean, that it's just plain and simple. They just jumped on the Panthers. Not like we didn't tell you. And since then, Florida has said, no. We're gonna take control. The offense has been absolutely outstanding, which is a little surprising because Boston's defense is good. And the Panthers' defense has been locked down. They have completely and utterly shut Boston down, which I thought would be their undoing. I think everybody believed, if I were to tell you that Boston was going to lose this series and be eliminated from the playoffs, the answer would have been because they couldn't muster enough offense. The answer was going to be they couldn't score more than three goals in two games. That was going to be the answer. So I don't think anybody's too shocked about the offense struggling a little bit, but I do think that they're shocked about the six goals in two straight games. And now it's time for adjustments. And I do believe that Boston is a formidable threat tomorrow. Enough that it kept me off. I still think Florida wins the series. I said that before time. I still think Florida, I almost said probably wins tomorrow. I think tomorrow could be 50-50. But it's enough to keep me away from betting them. I'm not betting the Panthers tomorrow at minus 165. If you gave me the Panthers even money, oof. Okay. Well, now we got an interesting. If you gave me the Panthers even money tomorrow, I think I have to take the Panthers. But getting back, what are they going to get back the Bruins here? 140, 135, 140. It's not enough for me to bite. And this is where, the numbers really come into play. It's not, that's 135, 140, whatever you might get. It's not enough for me to bite on this. I think the Bruins can play very well. But the Panthers are the clear better team in this spot. They were the better team before the second round began. They have done nothing but show everybody the last two games that things are clicking the right way for the Florida Panthers. And Boston may have hit the proverbial wall that we have been discussing. The wall that I do believe that a lot of people thought that they would hit. I don't think that this is all of a sudden a game where you're looking at this and you go, wow, I can't believe what happened. No. Go back a week. If I told you that, Boston jumped on Florida in game one. Then they couldn't score. They just continued to not be able to score. And, oh, by the way, Florida put up six goals. You'd go, all right, I'm shocked about the six goals in two straight games. But I'm not shocked Boston's down 2-1. You can't be a serious hockey fan and be shocked that Boston's down 2-1 in this spot. 5.5 goals is an interesting number tomorrow, by the way. 5.5 goals, you're going to have to pay for the over. You're going to have to pay a little bit for that over. But 5.5 goals, do you believe that Boston could find some offense? Do you believe that they could slow him down? There's been a lot of overs so far in the playoffs. A lot of overs. Usually the NHL playoffs is just fade to the under. You love the unders. You get a good solid six number. You need 7 goals to beat you. Man, you feel good about that. They set this at 5.5, and I'm not biting. This is going to be just a watch game. This is a sit back and watch me game. I'm not biting on the 5.5. I would bite my tongue. I would lean the over. I'm an unders player. Bite my tongue. I would lean the over. And I'm not jumping on the Panthers or Bruins. It's just not something I'm going to jump at. All right, guys. Let me take a quick timeout. Top of the hour here. When I get back, I'll touch on the Oilers Canucks really fast, and Tim Unglesby is going to join us for hour number two. I saved the baseball for him. Lots to talk about, including, is it too early to start talking about trades? And why I think Mason Miller should get a Juan Soto type of return in a trade. All that and more right after this. Hour number two coming up on Heatwave Sports.
Now back to Heatwave Sports.
All right, guys. Hour number two, Las Vegas. It is Heatwave Sports. I'm Tom Barton from TomBartonSports.com here with Tim Unglesby. And we've talked about a lot. I have to finish off my NHL talk, and then we will get into baseball talk. I have an opinion that I think Tim's going to go crazy for. I think he's going to call me nuts. I think he's going to think, you know, I started the Mother's Day celebration early here. I think he's thinking maybe I popped the champagne a little early on the new baby coming. I don't know. But I'm going to tell him I've thought about this quite a bit. I want to get his take. We'll get into that in a moment. First, let me finish off here. Because I've been screaming and hollering that the New York Rangers are clearly the best team left in the hockey playoffs. And they have been the best team all year. But I've been asking you guys to find me a number two. And I think a lot of people are going to turn around and say, well, Edmonton's the second best team, right? They play Vancouver tomorrow in a spot where we don't know if they're even going to win this series. It's Edmonton. They are also a team that you look at and you go, okay, it's hard to find their flaws, but I know what they are. Defense and goaltending. And Skinner's looked a lot better. He's got a shutout, right? But Vancouver was able to shut down Connor McDavid. Now, here's the thing with Edmonton. Now, I've been riding Edmonton for 3 years now. I consistently have them in the finals. Everyone tells me I'm crazy. I love the Stars. I fall all over myself for players that I think can take over the game. And they don't have one, they have two. McDavid got shut down. And I think most people are saying, look, that's not going to happen again. So Vancouver looks good at times. But do you think that they're going to completely shut him down consistently enough to get past them in the series? Tomorrow they are a 2-1 favorite, and I can't argue that they should be. I can't argue that they shouldn't be, I should say. Look, here's another high-scoring series. 4-3, 5-4, 4-3. They've scored 4 goals. And going back to the Kings, they've scored 4 goals in each of the last 3 games before that 1-0. Before that, they'd scored 6-4-7. I mean, you look at Edmonton, and you're going, all right, you need 5 to win. That's what the Canucks got in Game 1. You need 5 to win. That's what you're asking them to do. Oilers are 2-1 favorite tomorrow. Guys, you can't argue that Vancouver's the number 2 team or if Vancouver's even going to get by, but you can't do the same thing about the Oilers if they lose tomorrow. I don't think they will. They're a 2-1 favorite. If they lose tomorrow, the Oilers, they're in some serious trouble. Right? I mean, they have questions to answer for. By the way, the total there is 6.5. Can't go near that either. So I think we're really looking at an interesting situation here where there is no second team. The Rangers are the clear favorite team. They're the best team in the hockey playoffs. That doesn't mean that they're going to win the Stanley Cup. I have them winning it, but it doesn't mean they're going to. But it certainly shows you how competitive some of these have been. And it certainly shows you that people that when I threw down the gauntlet and I said, find me a hole, you couldn't do it. I could find you the hole in Vancouver's game. I could find you the hole in Edmonton's game. Certainly find you the hole in the Bruins game. Could find you the hole in every team that's left. Can't find the hole in the Rangers. All right, guys, let's move it over to Major League Baseball now. And I'm going to bring on Tim with me to talk about this. I want to refresh everyone before I make my statement. I want to refresh everybody what the return in the Juan Soto to the New York Yankees trade was. The return was, well, the Yankees got not only Juan Soto, but Trent Grisham. The Yankees gave up Michael King, Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, Drew Thorpe, and Kyle Higashioka. That's who they got back. Now, let's peel the layers back on that before I make my statement. Before I go out there and make my crazy statement to Tim, I want to go back and look at this realistically. Juan Soto, dynamic, ridiculous player. Also in his last year of a contract. Trent Grissom, really good defensive player, really better suited as a fourth outfielder, let's be honest. Okay, which with the Yankees, he's not even a fourth, he's a fifth or a sixth outfielder. The Yankees gave up a backup catcher, Higashioka, who, you like him for his clubhouse, you like him for his glove and all that, but on a contending team, he's a two, maybe a three. They give up Drew Thorpe, an unproven prospect. Randy Vasquez, we weren't sure if he was ever going to make it with the Yankees. Johnny Brito, at best, he's a number four. And Michael King, who showed a lot of promise, never eight innings. We didn't know if he was ever going to amount to an innings eater kind of guy that you could put at the top of the rotation. So I would say, conservatively, the New York Yankees gave up a number three, two possible number fives, a third string catcher, and a young arm with upside. And I tell you that to tell you this. Tim, if you're with us, here's the question to you, or my comment to you. Mason Miller has been thrown about as being a name that people want to go and trade for. And I heard that the asking price, one GM chuckled and said, the asking price for him is Juan Soto-like. And people laughed. Ah! Oakland's asking for Juan Soto. Let me tell you something. I think they should. Because I don't think that the trade return for Juan Soto was that big. If you're asking somebody, are you a World Series away from a dynamic closer who, oh, by the way, is under team control for the next 5 years? Oh, by the way, is not just a closer, but he's shutting the door on people in a ridiculous way. Are you a three, two fives, and a backup catcher away? I'm giving that. And now my team isn't going to go get him. But Tim, your team might. As a matter of fact, both of your teams might be in the bidding. I think one team for sure, the Baltimore Orioles. So let me welcome you to the show, Tim. And am I completely crazy in saying, when I read that quote and people scoffed at it, oh, a Juan Soto return, I think they forget who the Juan Soto return really was.
Right. They were just preoccupied with the name Juan Soto. My side of it would be, being an Orioles fan, what's the asking price, Tom? Because if we all know the problems that Craig Kimbrell's had lately, right? And that manager Brandon Hyde now has moved his bullpen around, so Kimbrel's kind of in a hold position or a setup position, depending on the baseball game. Like 2 days ago, he came in the sixth inning, or got out of the sixth into the seventh. Today, in extra innings, which they ended up winning, he was the winning pitcher. He came in the top of the 11th and shut down Arizona. But here's my thing on it: if you're the Orioles, do you go and obviously Oakland, that's their major trading piece, right, Tom, in order to continue to build for the future with their cheap owner. That's their best bargaining chip. So you go and kind of just go with what they want, like you said, just do it, or do you wait it out and see if you can pick up another closer at the deadline for much cheaper? Because my thing, and you and I had talked about it originally, was that as good as Mason Miller is now, will he be able to handle the pressure come September in the postseason? And we don't know that. You have veteran closers out there that have been there and done that. Maybe you feel more comfortable going with a guy that has postseason experience.
Tim, here's a Juan Soto return from the Orioles. And I want your take on this, okay? Here's a Juan Soto return. We'll give you, let's see, I'm going to say Heston, Cade Povich, Seth Johnson, and throw in an Austin Hayes. Are you making that deal?
I was until you threw in Austin Hayes. I think that's a little too much for a rookie.
So okay, how about a Ryan McKenna?
Yeah.
Okay, and that is a right, Juan Soto-like return.
Yeah.
And I think you're okay with a lot of those guys. Drew Thorpe was not the Yankees' number one prospect, no matter how much they wanted to throw that down your throat. Drew Thorpe was about the fifth or sixth best Yankee prospect. So you're going to fifth or sixth, you're going to a Connor Norby, okay? The Yankees, Brito and Vasquez, they weren't into the top 10. They weren't in the top 10, okay? You're talking about a Connor Norby, a Judd Fabian, a Trace Bright, and you know, throw me a guy like I said, throw me a Hearn, throw me a Ryan McKenna. That's a Juan Soto like return.
The trade off, Tommy, is that, like you said, Mason Miller is under team control for what, 4 more years, whereas Soto, you're going to have to re-sign him. So there's the trade-off in what you can expect or what you can ask for. But I would do it in that Baltimore has done such a great job, Tom, of building that farm system up and the depth there. And it's time, like we said last year, it's time to start trading pieces off, like we saw. Corbin Burns, that was a great deal on both ends, right? But the problem was that Baltimore's going to have to re-sign him. In this case, Mason Miller's locked up for a while. You just have to hope that a closer's mentality, that he can keep it and be more Emmanuel Class A, right, Tom, year after year, rather than like a Carlos Estevez who might as well throw him on the fire and let him burn, because those are the differences there when you talk about a closer and their mentality.
The Orioles have to be thinking closer. The Kansas City Royals, if they want to be contenders, probably thinking closer. The Texas Rangers, I know they got Kirby Yates back there and David Robertson, but they may be thinking about a closer. That's just in the American League. Over in the National League, you start to break it down and you go, the Cubs got to be thinking about a closer. I know that they're good, but they got to start thinking about a closer. And then you have a team, Tim, that makes a little bit of sense, and it pains me for that. I know Evan Phillips is good when he's healthy, but the Dodgers have not had that lockdown closer. They rotate, they move guys, they have Graterol, they have this guy, they have Vesia. Is there a possible dark universe that we're entering where the Dodgers go out and get Mason Miller?
Oh, 100%. That's 100%. That's not even a 99.9. That's 100% that they would be in that mix. I think you could see Philadelphia could be in that mix, right? Only one out of the power teams, I would say, how do you turn that down? Even Atlanta, where Iglesias has been solid, you have to consider it, right, Tom? Because adding somebody like that to your bullpen just creates a lockdown inning, basically, and that's one less inning in the postseason that you have to worry about to get those 27 out.
I find this interesting. I always like to look, beyond the conversation, right? And I'm looking at the Oakland A's, and I'm going, okay, well, you know, they need a lot of things. They do. They need a lot of things. And I go, yeah, they definitely need young hitting. I think that's where they want to focus is the hitting. The Los Angeles Dodgers' number one prospect is Dalton Rushing. He's a catcher. Could be a first baseman, but he's a catcher. Their number eight prospect is Diego Carta. Or Cartea. They also just re-signed Will Smith to a five-year deal, Tim. I think that the Oakland A's would bite if they offered up their number one prospect in Dalton Rushing with a little... By the way, Lorenzo also. They have three catchers in the top nine. They go give them Dalton Rushing, who's the number one guy. Go give him Dalton Rushing and a Maddox Bruns, maybe, an arm. I think Oakland pulls the trigger. And a team like Baltimore that's trying to hold on to their top two or three prospects, and a team like Philly that would try to hold on to their top two or three prospects, here comes the LA Dodgers, and they're saying, you know what? We'll give you that number one prospect. And we'll throw in a kicker. And it doesn't hurt them. Because Philly's not giving up Painter or a Bell, probably not an Aiden Miller. You know, you're getting down to 4 or 5. The Dodgers can offer up their number one prospect. It's a scary situation. And a piece of me kind of wants Baltimore to get him. But I don't think Baltimore is in that mode. I think this is an Oakland A's and Dodgers match made in hell, we'll call it, because I think Mason Miller becomes a Dodger.
And aren't the Dodgers basically in panic mode? Would you say that, not counting that false title during the COVID era, when was the last time the Dodgers won a World Series, right? It's almost same thing with the Yankees. They can go out and make those moves because it's almost like they have to. Whereas I think Baltimore, do they really have to make the move, Tom? Can they just say, hey, let's go Canelo, let's go Colombe, let's figure it out? Mason Miller may not be the answer. And I think that's the problem is when you're trading away top guys, your top farm guys, is that a risk you want to take? Philly at least has won a World Series recently. Atlanta at least has won a World Series recently. They can be selective with it, but I think you're talking about teams that are, could I use the word desperate, versus a Baltimore team which is just, hey, we're still on the path to getting there.
Since we are talking about trades, Tim, I mentioned this at the top of the show. When is too early to start really thinking about trades? Every year, and let me preface this by saying this. Every year, Major League Baseball, we get so excited for the trade deadline. And we, oh man, it's going to be crazy. And the Juan Soto's of the world. And it's going to be nuts. And it usually recently has been absolutely chaotic leading up to it. But there's always that trade that takes place a little too early. And in recent years, it has proven to be a pretty wise trade. The trade that happens, it's usually not in May, but in early June. And we go, wow, okay, that kind of came out of nowhere because they want to be the first to act, the first to jump on it, the first to get going. I think it's probably a little too early to pull a trigger now, but in 2 weeks, Tim, we've watched early June trades pan out really, really well. Do you think it's too early to kind of make that trade, or are you in the camp of, hey, listen, if you need to fix it, then fix it right away?
I guess it would depend on what you need, right, Tommy, versus who's available, because so early in the season, I think everybody thinks that they have a shot at getting into the playoffs, and they don't want to move pieces, especially the contract guys that are free agents next year. They don't want to necessarily move them too early. I think that's why we get excited towards the end of the summer when we have all these big names. They're going to be free agents and teams are still hanging around. And then it's like, oh man, I don't know if we're going to see a trade. And then usually, right, Tom, last couple years, usually the trade deadline has kind of just fallen short of our expectations. But I say in the aspect of a Mason Miller, I don't think Oakland's playing for the postseason, regardless of what their record's going to be. So
they're only three games out.
What's that?
They're only three games out. Three games under 500, but three games out.
But long-term, you know that ownership and you know the way it works there. If they can move them and get the best deal now, why wait because I don't know if they're going to get that best deal from a team come the end of the summer. I haven't seen those top prospects fly off the board like we think they should. I mean, teams have been able to hold the top guys here over the last 5 years. I think if you can get the best deal now, if you're Oakland, you do it, because I don't know if you're going to be able to get that come August.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I find it tongue-in-cheek funny that people say, well, Oakland's kind of in this thing. Yeah, because they're in a bad division. They're three games under 500, guys. Let's pump the brakes, right? And a lot of the guys that they're relying on are going to hit that rookie wall or their innings limit and a lot of that. Oakland also has had a recent history where they develop bullpen arms. Mason Miller's fantastic. He's got the helium behind him. I'm with you. I am dangling. The fact that Oakland is asking for a Juan Soto return, I think they should, but I also think they have to be realist and say, we got to sell when we can sell here. And it stinks for, you know, the Vegas A's that you won't be watching Mason Miller. I think that there's a 0% chance that he is the Oakland A's closer by the time, you know, Vegas gets this team. I think it's a 0% chance that he's the Oakland A's closer next trade deadline. He may last the year there if they hang in there around 500. But they have to be smart enough to get some kind of return on him. And I think that he is the biggest guy to get a return. I wouldn't be surprised if Brent Rooker was out of town too. Rooker looks good. He's another guy. The A's are not trying to lose, but they're going to get rid of players that have some kind of value, and these guys have value.
I asked you this privately, and you told me no. Now there's been a few more days, if you think about it, and just kind of examine both sides of this. If Baltimore moved Kerstedt and Kowser for Miller, looking at it on the table, Oakland way advantage, right? But if Mason Miller leads the Orioles to a World Series, isn't that the goal at the end of the day? And Baltimore's deep in the outfield, not only on the major league level, but in the prospect level. So is it necessarily that bad of a deal, even though they would get the perceived bottom end of it?
Tim, I only have to go back to the Chicago Cubs. The Chicago Cubs traded the number one prospect in baseball at the time in Gleyber Torres for a two and a half month rental of Aroldis Chapman. Gleyber Torres went on to become, you know, look, he's having a bad year this year, but to become a pretty damn good player, an all-star for the New York Yankees. Aroldis Chapman spent 2 months in Chicago, went back to the Yankees. So they rented him for 2 months for the top prospect in all of baseball. And there's not a single Cubs fan that would do anything different because they got a ring.
Right.
So, I mean, the question has been asked and answered by every Cubs fan out there. Give up anybody if it gets you a ring.
And Mason Miller would be around at least three or four more years, minimum.
Yeah, you start to have visions of, you know, a Batista, Miller, Cano, 1-2-3 punch like that. And you go, yeah. Wow, okay. Now you're building, I guess, that one component of the Orioles that is missing. I have no questions that they have young hitting. It's their pitching that's always been seemingly a problem. They tried to fill that with Corbin Burns. I don't know what Bradish is going to look like. I'm not sure with this rotation with Kremer, who just came back. I'm not sure with Wells. I'm not sure. Even the bullpen, you said it. They tried to fix it with Kimbrel. We all knew that was a mistake. Cano might or might not be built for the ninth inning. We don't know. You go out there and you make that deal, all of a sudden Baltimore's scary. But I can say that for a couple of teams, but the Orioles are the team that's closest in that spot.
Yeah.
Tim, what about the teams that you're starting to look at and you go, when is it time to panic? Because the Toronto Blue Jays are only three games under 500, Tim. But the Blue Jays are 8.5 games out. Vladimir Guerrero was struggling up until a couple days ago. Vladimir Guerrero struggling. They are getting good pitching, and they're still not winning. They are only three games under 500, but in the standing, 7.5 out. The Houston Astros, when are they hitting panic mode? Because they are 11 games under 500, Tim. You go to a team like the St. Louis Cardinals. The Cardinals are 9 games under .500. The San Francisco Giants are 9 games back. The Diamondbacks are 8.5 games back. When can we start to get to a point of, okay, we got to take this serious? This isn't just, oh, early season, you know, here we go. We're looking at 41 games now, Tim.
Those teams have to be in panic mode just because, in Toronto, for example, look at the division they play in, Tom, already. You just said it, where they set, because Baltimore and New York are so good. Cleveland's off to such a great start right now. Even Minnesota, Kansas City. So there's three teams in the Central, which a lot of people didn't expect to be this good this early. And, you know, they're eating up wild card spots. Their only saving grace, I think, Toronto right now is the West is so bad, because right now it would be one team coming out of there, right? And that's the defending champion, Texas Rangers, who are about to be swept by Colorado. So I think Toronto definitely has to be in panic mode soon. In the National League, look, the Dodgers, the Braves, the Phillies, the Cubs, Brewers, there's 5 of your 6 teams right there. They all have to be in panic mode. That problem is that the good teams are really good, and they're off to great starts. And you know how it gets, Tom. You look up one day in the middle of the summer, and all of a sudden you're 14 games out of a playoff spot. It's over. There's nothing. You're not making that up. So it's panic mode now.
Yeah, I'm looking at these teams. I'm going St. Louis. I think they're going to be sellers. I think that the Cardinals have to come to the realization, which segues very nicely into my next question. And we had a brief discussion about this on texting. And you asked me, what's wrong with Paul Goldschmidt? He's, what, 0 for 34? Had 4 strikeouts again today. A lot of people are saying, well, age just caught up with him. Guys, this guy was the MVP of the league 2 years ago. Now, Goldschmidt traditionally starts slow. I get that. But he does not look good right now. I think he finds it. I think he finishes. I think Goldschmidt still finishes with right around 20 home runs. I still think he hits, I don't know, maybe 250, 260. I would chip in 5 stolen bases or so. I still think he could be a productive player. He's just not Paul Goldschmidt anymore. But he's in the last year of a contract on a last-place Cardinals team. That is an older team. I think the Cardinals are going to hang this up quick. I think Houston's going to stay in it. I think the Cardinals are going to hang it up quick. And the question is very, very blatant. When do you eventually get rid of Arenado and Goldschmidt? By every swing he takes, Goldschmidt is losing value. By every single cut he takes. We talked about a player getting traded early and a team making an early move. Is Goldschmidt that guy, Tim?
He's contract year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely that guy. I don't even necessarily blame him. I think, okay, is it possible that you just wake up one day and the game has passed you by that quickly? I don't think so, right? So I think this is a mixture of, well, right now, he's obviously in his own head. 0 for 34 is very hard to do, right, with a guy that caliber of a player. So he's in his own head. But I don't think that they set the lineup for him with, what is it, Donovan and Newt Barr and Fermin, whoever they're putting ahead of him aren't getting on base, so it's putting him in a position where they can pitch to him. They don't have to worry about him doing damage to him. So he's in a bad spot, but he's definitely they definitely are going to move him. I don't see them keep. There's no reason to. They're not going to make the playoffs, Tom.
I'm looking at San Francisco, and I'm saying they continuously miss out on that big bat. They have Lamont Wade out there, and you're looking at them, and I'm going, man, that makes that that's kind of one of those good fits. You just. You know, you look at a team that can make a move, an underrated type of move, a move that just makes sense for everybody. They get them cheap. San Francisco looks like that team, but I'm not sure if San Fran even wants to kind of deal with that. So the other team that kind of pops to my mind right away is the Seattle Mariners. The Mariners constantly need, you know, that offense. Ty France is their first baseman. Look, I mean, he's a fine player, but that's about it. If you're Seattle or San Francisco, and year after year, you continuously miss out on the big bats, don't you have to take a shot at a guy like Paul Goldschmidt that maybe he's got something left?
Yeah. And they can afford to do it and probably get away with not giving up much for him. And then you put him behind, what, J-Rod, above Raleigh. That's a pretty solid middle of the order right there, Tommy. If you're talking about, you go J-Rod, Goldie, Raleigh, Haniger, right? That's pretty deep.
You mentioned J-Rod. He's somebody I wanted to go into as well. He's got some problems this year. He's got one home run on the year. He hit a ball tonight, 98 miles per hour and 103 miles per hour just for outs. So maybe you can say, you know what, it's a little bit of bad luck. Perhaps you can go down that path. Tim, I'm sitting here and I'm going, I'm sorry. You got to be some really, really concerned about him. A guy like Matt Olson, who's batting under 200 on Atlanta, you could be patient with because he's got hitters around him. I think Matt Olson will be perfectly fine. Overall, even if he's mediocre, he's got the lineup around him. But J-Rod's it. That's all they have in Seattle. So have you seen a problem with J-Rod? What is the issue with him? And what can we expect moving forward? I mean, do you think that he's going to turn this around, or do you think the lack of protection is just killing him?
There's no doubt the lack of protection is killing him. Haniger's batting, 200? Cal Raleigh's your cleanup hitter, Tom, batting 200? There's definitely the protection issue. I think, again, he's just in a slump. He's in his own head. He's too good of an athlete to stay this bad, but I don't know how much better it can get for him, Tommy. He's not raising that average up to 300 this year. I doubt it with that protection around him. So they need to go out and make a move. And I've heard rumblings that they're obviously in the discussions, but I don't know. It just depends on what you're looking to get back, because that's the fun thing about being in the month of May right now, is everything is kind of on hold because these teams are still trying to battle for playoff spots.
In all of baseball this year, who has been the most surprising, whether it be player or team? Who's the one that has kind of turned your head?
Well, I think it would be easy. I'll say, let's go teams. And as much as I want to say that Kansas City is surprising, you and I both talked about all the moves they made in the offseason, bringing in the veterans that have already started. They've panned themselves out through 40 games. And the more that I look at where we're at the quarter point of the season, crazy to think that we're already at that level. But for me, it's Cleveland, man. You're down two quality pitchers. When you look at that lineup doesn't necessarily strike fear into the heart of anybody. Yet they're, Tommy, they're 24-16. They're very, putting up runs, the pitching looks good, and yet they're playing in a division where they're only a half game up over the Twins. But I think Cleveland for me is the surprise, because I just didn't have them there. And then I'd say Kansas City's right there with them as well. But I guess if you're going to say that, you have to put Minnesota in the discussion. I didn't think they would be there either. We always talked about that division is that one team has to win it. Which one was it going to be? I just didn't think Cleveland would be this good right now.
Yeah, you went with the positives. You're right. I mean, Cleveland is a team that I thought was going to hit the wall before the season began. And then we had the conversation. I said the only way I can see Cleveland being relevant this year is if their pitching just dominates. And you had Tanner Bibee, Gavin Williams, and Shane Bieber with maybe a Tristan McKenzie coming back. And I said, look, I can see that happening. Well, here's the reality, guys. Shane Bieber's done for the year. Gavin Williams may need Tommy John surgery. He hasn't taken the ball. Tristan McKenzie just started. And Tanner Bibee's been an okay option. He's certainly not pitching as an ace. And the Guardians are still winning. They are defying all kinds of logic. But in my opinion, that's what the Guardians have been doing for years now. Every year I go, man, they don't have enough hitting. Every year I look at this team and I go, they're just not going to have enough. And every single year we look at the standings and they're right in it. So I would ask you the follow-up, Tim, of do you think it's going to continue for Cleveland? But I know my answer is absolutely not, but they continue to prove me wrong. Do you think that they could continue this without a Gavin Williams who might not be coming back, without a Shane Bieber who might not be coming back? Can they continue to string this together?
I mean, my initial answer would be no. just because of what you just, it's hard to overcome those missing pieces. That's why at this point it's still a surprise to me, because those things kind of happened like in succession, right? So I'm going to say no initially, but I look at the rest of that division, Tom. Forget the White Sox. They're an embarrassment, right? Even though they've actually won four in a row and 6 of 10. Detroit, sneaky. I think they possibly could push them. And then Minnesota and KC, so wide open. But I would say that they have to come back down to earth somewhere else. My follow-ups or my runner-ups would be Houston, Tom, at 14-25. I didn't think they'd be this bad. When you have a rotation of Valdez and Javier and Verland, I didn't think they would be this bad at this point. And then I'd have to say, obviously the easy one is that everybody's making fun of now on social media, is the Cardinals, Tommy, at 15 wins. They're literally 3 wins more than the White Sox. So did I think they would be bad? I was looking for some type of, maybe not an escalation back up to the top of the Central, but I didn't, you know, they had a bad season last year. I just couldn't see it back to back, and I was wrong.
Yeah, and one of the things that we always knew about the Cardinals was their development. That's my team. I didn't have the Cardinals winning this division. I thought that they would be fine, but I didn't have them winning the division. But I never expected this. That's my surprise team. I am stunned, flat out stunned at how bad the Cardinals are and the way that they're losing. Collectively, the entire team isn't hitting. They sent down Jordan Walker, who was, you know, at least their bridge to the future. They are just mismanaging and mishandling after year after year after year of us just heaping nothing but praise on the way that the franchise was handled. I think it's a complete mishandling of the franchise. They went out there, they got Lance Lynn, who was 105 with a 5 ERA, Steven Matz, who can't stay on the field. They go out there, they make these deals. Sonny Gray was a good pickup. They sign old veterans. They sign a guy like Matt Carpenter back there. They don't really get involved in anybody young. And then you go, okay, well, they did that to make room for the young players like a Jordan Walker, and they send him down. Mason Wynn hadn't been starting. I mean, how does an organization just completely go opposite of everything that's made them good?
That's what I was going to ask you. They're a baseball franchise, always had a great front office, always made, they're the baseball team, right, Tom? That's what we talk about. Who are the baseball teams? And it's a head-scratcher, and you're right, the mismanagement, but is it a fact of maybe that front office got old and their value on what the players were was wrong, or just these guys never made the correct jump? Look, Burleson was a top prospect for years. He just not really panned out, right? I think Newt Barr has a lot of potential, but he can't do it when you're batting 200, batting in the second spot. And then the big guys, you said Goldie's got 2 home runs, well, Arenado's got 2 home runs. You know, you're expecting more out of your veterans. And then the pitching staff, it's a red cross. So it just went bad for them all at once. And I don't know, like, I don't even know how to really discuss how I feel, because I don't understand it myself, Tom. It's weird.
Tim, I want to throw a team at you in the Washington Nationals. Before the year began, we sat here. I told you they were my underdog team to make a playoff push. They were my underdog team to go over the team totals over. Spoke about it in hour one. Guys, I put my money where my mouth was, okay? I took them team total over. I took them at plus pretty nice odds to make the playoffs. Washington's 19-19, but they're not just 19-19. They are 19-19 with a guy in James Woods who just had, 5 home runs in the last 7 games. James Woods is a top 10 overall prospect in baseball, still playing in the minors. They could bring him up at any time. They also have a Cade Cavalli, who is a starting pitcher who last year was getting all kinds of hype. They could bring him up. Dylan Cruz, I know he has not gotten off to a good start, but he's the future. He's on his way up. The Nationals rebuilt quickly. They had a deal they got from San Diego. They got Gore and Abrams in the core of their team. Ruiz isn't even hitting. Hebert Ruiz is just not hitting yet. You know he's going to start hitting. I was all over the Nationals before the year, Tim. I thought that they could play right around 500 ball. It's on the air. We have that documented, and I have tickets to prove it. I am fully buying into the Washington Nationals. I believe that Washington is decidedly going to be better than the Mets and Marlins. I think that Washington is in the same group with the Brewers, Pirates, Reds. I think that they're in the same group with the Giants and maybe the D-backs. So I have the Dodgers ahead of them. I have maybe the Cubs ahead of them, maybe the Padres ahead of them, and then, of course, Philly and Braves. I think Washington's got a shot here, Tim. I don't think I threw my money away. I'm excited about the Nationals.
If anybody's ever listened to this show over the years, right, Tom, we're always excited about teams that get a chance to rebuild. And we've seen it happen and been successful. Kansas City, Houston, Atlanta, now Baltimore, right? They were all bottom feeders, basically, and they had to restructure their whole team. And I think Washington, that might be the team now, right, Tom? That might be the next one that we're talking about, because the Soto deal, when it happened, you and I were like, man, Washington did a really good job on the return there. And you just mentioned some of the names. Hassel was in that deal as well, who possibly could be coming up, right, Tom? Gore's been unbelievable. I mean, you're talking about a future number one pitcher there. And you got Josiah Gray, who's coming off the DL here soon. They're just going to get better as the season goes along, Tom. They're young, they're hungry. And I think when you said it on the air, you said, they're my surprise, they're the final team making the playoffs. I was like, okay, I see where he's going. I just don't know if they're there yet. But where they're at versus where they've been at the 40-game mark in the previous seasons, I think it definitely shows that they there's something to be reckoned with. And I think the playoffs are very much, very much in reach.
Tim, let's talk about my Yankees, because you are an Orioles fan. Everybody knows that listens to the show. My Yankees are chasing you, okay? I am getting very, very, very excited because the Yankees are winning games and winning with this mentality. And I know they don't have to make a deal because they have guys coming back. I'm looking at the Yankees and I'm going, Jason Dominguez is now taking, you know, swings. He's going to start a rehab assignment. He's going to be back in a month or so. Adding Jason Dominguez to this mix is a dynamic, dynamic move. DJ LeMahieu, even though he's gone down a little bit, he's coming back. He'll be in the mix. And then, of course, the big guy, Gerrit Cole, is rejoining the Yankees in the next couple of weeks. Yeah, probably, I shouldn't say it, next couple of months. He'll be back before the All-Star break, they're saying. As an Oriole fan, you look down, you look at the Yankees, and you go, they're only a game and a half back. They're missing their ace and Cy Young winner. They're missing their number one prospect in Dominguez, who's going to contribute this year. They're missing who was supposed to be their leadoff hitter in DJ LeMahieu. How scared are you looking over your shoulder?
Oh, you have to be worried. And but this is what we called, right, Tom? We said it was going to be these two all throughout the year and in the playoffs, and that they were going to battle for the right to go to the World Series. So I don't know. They're scared, per se, but I think they definitely know the Yankees are there. And we'll see how it goes when both teams are healthy. They play each other, they don't even play each other again for another month, which is crazy, schedule makers, but they did back in that last part of the season with some good Oriole-Yankee matchups. So it'll be fun to watch. There's no doubt, though, both those teams have an eye on each other, Tommy, because I think that's what everybody wants to see anyways.
Yeah, I'm getting enthusiastic about the moves that could happen. And you look at the Yankees, you go, okay, they certainly can make a deal. But overall, you look at this and you go, their deals are coming. We know that their reinforcements are on their way. And their reinforcements are a Cy Young winner and the number one prospect in their system. That's enormous. The looking over your shoulder, it has to come into the equation. And I say that also when I talk about a team like the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Dodgers are out to a 6.5 game lead over the Padres. And in a normal circumstance, Tim, I think we're looking at the Padres and we're saying, all right, hey, 6.5 games, that's not crazy. A lot of season left. Padres just made a move to try to get better. Michael King looked good in his last outing. They got Dylan Cease. You get excited. But then you remember who's coming back for the Dodgers. You have Clayton Kershaw, Hall of Famer, on the other side of the All-Star break, right? You have your closer, Evan Phillips, coming back. You have guys like Grayroll and bullpen guys. They just got Blake Treinen back. The Dodgers are scary like the Yankees are because they don't have to make any moves with an outside trade source. They're getting big-time reinforcements coming in immediately that you know are going to join this team. So how much better do you think the Dodgers are going to get? And do they need to make the move that we were talking about, a Mason Miller or something like that, or just let it internally happen? I think we may have lost Tim. Tim, are you there?
I think that they let it happen internally. But they're a team that, like we just discussed, they have these dispensable pieces that don't really hurt them in the long run. So they can do whatever they want to do and get whoever they want to get, essentially, to try to win. And it may be unfair if you're a fan of another team, but that's just the way it sets itself up. But Tommy, how many times have we seen these bigger moves work out for teams? Usually it doesn't. It's the small pieces that create more of a chemistry in the dugout during the stretch run that work out for you. So I don't know. You know, like you said, you're almost making a deal with the devil with the Dodgers, but has it worked out for them? And it hasn't.
Last team I want to ask you about, Tim. I saved the last at the end here. Paul Skeens. Looked good today. He's the most anticipated prospect, pitching prospect, since Steven Strasburg. I think that's very fair to say. Came up, had 7 strikeouts. The usual problems, pulled him in the 4th inning. The Pirates went on to just do mind-bogglingly bad bullpen play right there. But suddenly the Pirates, again, a team that I've been touting for 2 years is doing the right thing. Suddenly the Pirates have Skeens as a 1, Jones as a 2, suddenly they're in play, only 6.5 games out themselves. Couple of things break right. Maybe we're talking about the Pirates making a push. Do you think that the emergence of a Paul Skeens and a Jared Jones sped up the clock in the Pirates' brass minds where, hey, maybe we do have a shot here. Maybe we have a shot to do something special this year and go 500 or squeak into the playoffs?
Yeah, for sure I think it did. The problem is, it's Pittsburgh, it's the Pirates, right? Same ownership, right? You can change the front office all you want. For whatever reason, it's the Pirates. And wasn't this a franchise, Tom, that had at one point Bauer and Cole in the same rotation?
Yes.
What did it get them, right? Nothing. It got them nothing. And I, as much as I have no yes or no about Pittsburgh either way, it doesn't matter to me. I don't hate them, don't like them. But whenever I see everybody talk about the Pirates and their youth and they have all these great prospects, what is it? How many times have they been in the playoffs in the last 10 years? Once? There's just something wrong there. So as much as I like to see Skeens and Jones and think that they're going to be, you know, something to contend with, I have to see it happen first. And that's the problem for me is that I just haven't seen it. I need to see it. As far as Skeens goes, how would you rate that performance today? I read it was 17 pitches over 100 miles an hour. He looked impressive, but he did run into some issues. And I know that they had him on some type of pitch count in the minor leagues. They didn't want him to go hit the wall. So what do you do here? Do you put him on a pitch count as well?
I mean, you have to early on. It's okay to get his feet wet. He looked really good. And again, this is kind of why I'm asking you the question, because if the Pirates feel like, okay, we're going to throw him out there, he's going to be the new face of the franchise, he's going to sell tickets, you know, people are going to wear fake mustaches and all that, and if they go down that road, yeah, baby him, who cares? But if the Pirates really think, you know what, maybe with a 1-2 punch, because Jones's emergence has been fantastic, maybe we can make a push, I think you just let this guy roll. Hold him to the 5 innings, but give him the 5. I mean, let him go the 5. I was a little surprised that they yanked him out with all of the fervor that was going on today.
Yeah, he was only at 85 pitches, Tom, when they pulled him. Let him work his way out of it, right? Why not, in your debut, look good, prove that you can, you know, oohs and ahs of how fast he's throwing. At the same time, he's in a spot where he can try to work himself out of it in his debut, and they pull him. I don't know. And the same thing with Jones is, if they are in the playoff chase, Tommy, come July, where do you cut them off? That's what we've talked about year after year, is how far do you let these young guys go before you have to shut them down?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because, yeah, the Pirates are going to need every bit of those young arms to make some sort of push. The Padres, like we said, Michael King is a key component of that team. They're going to need innings from him to make that sort of push. The Orioles have all kinds of banged up arms. How much do they push them? Guardians, Tanner Bibee is the number one there. How much do they push them? What about the Royals? Even a guy like Ragans and Springer and Dylan Lynch, lots of young arms. Tigers, lots of young arms coming back. There's a lot of teams that are at the top of the standings right now that you're looking at and you're going, your pitcher's not making 150 innings. I mean, forget about 180. I mean, they're not going to be there. So what is your team going to look like? I think that's a really good point. Tim, I'm glad you were able to jump on with us, man. We got only a couple minutes left. I want to say happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. Happy Mother's Day to you, Tim. I hope you have a good day tomorrow.
Thank you. We got some programming notes, Tommy. We're actually going to be off for a minute. We have Mother's Day tomorrow. Next week, Tom, I'll actually be on the road because my boy is playing in the 3A Nevada State Baseball Championships, so we'll be off for that. And then we have the Memorial Day weekend, and you might have a surprise coming here real soon as well, so the schedule's kind of up and up, but we'll be back definitely the first weekend in June.
Oh, there is no way that there won't be. The next time I speak to you guys, there will be a new Barton, a part of this household. He's doing 12 days, Tim. They're not letting him go past 12 days, though. It's a good thing we have off, because I'm gonna need some extra time here, you know, to get, instead of those 2-hour naps, a 2.5-hour nap.
Right, right. Well, all right, guys. Officially on air. Congratulations.
Thank you, Tim. All right, guys. Everybody have a happy Mother's Day out there. Go check me out at TomBartonSports.com. It's TomBartonSports.com, Tom Barton Sports over on Twitter. Check out all the stuff that we're doing. We will see you back in June. We're coming. We won't talk to you guys until June, so we'll be in the middle of probably the Stanley Cup Finals, probably the NBA Finals. Maybe a trade season will be up and rolling. Have a good vacation. Make sure that you don't miss us too much, but you miss us a lot. Have a very good night, everybody.